The next case on our calendar is 03-822, West Nova Tech versus Roger Tracy, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Ferry.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, this case involves the Ohio Corporation Franchise Tax, particularly the liability of West Nova Tech under the net income basis upon which the franchise tax liability is determined. The corporate franchise tax is a tax on the privilege of a corporation doing business in Ohio. It's measured in one of two ways, either on a net worth basis or a net income basis, whichever is greater. This case involves the net income basis and specifically includes a couple of issues regarding the proper calculation of the corporation's liability under the net income basis. The net income basis, you first take certain income that's allocated in and out of Ohio based on the situs of the property sold. All other income by statute is required to be apportioned pursuant to an apportionment formula that is statutorily prescribed in 5733.05b2.
West Novec's argument, as best I can glean it, and correct me if I'm wrong, seems to be that because this was not just ordinary retail sales in the ordinary course of business, but because they closed out, sold everything at once, it was more like an asset sale because it was everything rather than what you think of as the ordinary course of business sale. And because it was all sold at once, not in the ordinary course of business, it deserved different tax treatment. What's your best argument against that?
Well, the best argument, Justice Stratton, is that that is simply not what the specific statutory provisions regarding allocation and apportionment require. Nor is it what this court required in the Borden case.
Does the statute ever anywhere address when it's not an ordinary course of business but a bulk sale of all the assets, or are you interpreting that because they still are retail assets or retail sale assets?
Your Honor, I'm not interpreting the statute that none of the allocation provisions in 5733.051A through G provide for allocation of gains or losses from the sale of assets where that sale is not in the ordinary course of business. Not a single provision authorizes the allocation of such gains. There's simply no ordinary, not in the ordinary course of business provision in any of the allocation divisions of the statute. Both West Nova Tech and the board simply read that language into one of the provisions, from best I can tell. The only statutory allocation provision that the board refers to that might be even close to this situation is 5733.051D, which provides for the allocation of capital gains and losses from the sale of tangible personal property. But clearly, inventory is not a capital asset. And that statute only authorizes allocation of capital gains and losses. And what we have here at issue, the only issue we have here with respect to the items of income, were the net, it was actually a net loss from the bulk sale of its inventory. There were other assets that were sold that would fall within D, and the commissioner allowed the allocation of those, or machinery and equipment, furniture and fixture, and other fixed assets, which would clearly be capital assets and fall within Division D.
There's a certain attractiveness to that argument. I mean, so, sort of logically seems to make much more sense than the other treatment, but is that then an argument best left to the legislature to remedy if that's the case, rather than us trying to interpret the statute?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. And first I would state that the apportionment concept is really the favored, because the whole idea of apportioning income rather than allocating income is the understanding that in large corporations, the income generated is and the value of the business is reflected by all of its operations in all of the states in which it does business. it's not a particular segment of the business that generates this particular value of the business. And the one in Michigan, for instance, that generates this segment of the value of the business. The apportionment mechanism has been recognized by the United States Supreme Court and this court on several occasions as being the best way to measure the value of the corporation's business conducted in Ohio and in the other states as well. I would note that subsequent to the year at issue in this case in 2003, the General Assembly actually did amend the law to specifically provide that the income from the sale of assets when a company is selling all of its assets and going out of business is to be apportioned. So actually the General Assembly has been even more specific to say that all assets, all of the assets or income from the sale of the business assets are to be apportioned. And now that would include machinery and equipment, furniture and fixture, items that under the previous law were to be allocated. So I think the General Assembly has spoken since that their policy is that apportionment really is the best mechanism, the best way to measure the value of the business in the state of Ohio. The board seemed to rely, to believe that this court's decision in the Borden case supported the notion that sales of items not in the ordinary course of business should be allocated. But that's not what Borden said at all. Borden was clearly dealing with capital assets. In fact, what the board ignores is a very specific and critical word in the court's decision in Borden. What it stated was that divisions C and D of 5733.051 of the revised code specifically dealt with the sale of depreciable assets. Again, inventory is not a depreciable asset.
West Novatek's accountant concede that?
Yes, on several occasions, West Novatek's accountant conceded that the inventory didn't constitute a capital asset, a depreciable asset, and that the gains from the sale were not capital gains and losses. Again, we're dealing with a capital or with a net loss on the sale of inventory in this case. The board appeared to be somewhat confused because its conclusion that it stated that Ohio can't allocate property situs in Michigan to Ohio. Plainly, that's not what Ohio is doing. The question is the net loss allocable under 051A through G? If it's not, under Division H of 5733.051, it's required to be added into apportionable income that simply is apportioned among the states in which the corporation did business based on the four-factor apportionment formula. The apportionment formula is designed to properly apportion the value of the business among all the states in which a corporation does business. It measures its sales, its property, and its payroll. And based on that formula, you come up with a percentage of the apportionable income that properly measures the extent of the business conducted in Ohio. The second issue involves the sales factor of the net income apportionment formula. The sales factor basically takes sales in Ohio over sales everywhere, and you come up with a percentage. You add that to the property and the payroll factors and come up with a specific percentage. West Novatek did not include the receipts from the sale of this bulk inventory in the sales factor. But the exemption or the exclusion that it relied on is very specific. It eliminates receipts from the sale or disposal of capital assets or assets described in Internal Revenue Code Section 1231. Again, West Novatek's accountant admitted on several occasions that the inventory did not fall within either of those two descriptions. The final issue involves the question of whether or not West Novtech could deviate or use an alternative method other than the statutory method. The tax commissioner, in his final determination, determined that it could not because it didn't meet the statutory requirement that such request must be in writing and must accompany the return. Section 5733.05b2d is plain in setting forth that requirement. And this court so held in the Cooper Tire and Rubber case. The board found, however, that following Cooper Tire in the statute would produce a harsh result, and therefore found that the commissioner should have considered it anyway. That holding is not supported by the statute or by the decision in Cooper. In fact, it is directly contrary to those, to the statute and to Cooper Tire and Rubber. The board also indicated that it should have been allowed to deviate because the use of the different method was obvious from a review of the return. That's simply not the case. Again, as West Novtech's witness admitted, one looking at the return, the franchise tax report, would not know that they were using a different method than the statutory method. In fact, you wouldn't even know there was a sale of inventory that was at issue. There was nothing filed with the franchise tax report at all. The first time that the company submitted any information that would give a breakdown of the sale and the location of the property was in response to a letter issued by a tax agent during the course of the audit, some 2.5 years after the report was filed. It was a series of letters, two letters and responses. The response to the last letter, which was submitted almost 3 years after the report was filed, gave the breakdown of what was included within the sale, machinery, equipment, furniture, fixtures, and the inventory, and gave a breakdown of the location of the property that was sold. That's the first time that any information was obtained. So clearly, the board erred in finding, first of all, that even if it was clear from a return, it was clear from the return or the report in Cooper Tire Rubber that they used something different than the statutory formula. But that was deemed not to be sufficient because the statute was very specific. The statute required that the request be made in writing and accompanied the report. For these reasons, the commissioner believes with respect to these 2 points, the Board of Tax Appeals erred and should be reversed. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Barron. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices, I appreciate the opportunity to see you this morning. When the report for this tax year was filed, I was as thin as Mr. Farron. I was young, and I had hair. It's been around for a long time. A lot of things have changed in the statutes. The text has grown from a Title 57 of Anderson's about this thick to a Title 57 of Anderson's about that thick. Things change over time. One thing basically that hasn't is that Ohio imposes its franchise tax on foreign corporations for the same thing now as it did then, and that is for 3 things, for owning or using part or all of its capital in the state of Ohio, for holding a safe certificate of compliance to do business in Ohio, or for doing business in Ohio. West Novtech was a foreign corporation for tax year 1988. And it's under that guise that the franchise tax against the company is levied. Now, this court has recognized back in the R.H. Macy case, R.H. Macy versus Lindley, that the goal of the state's franchise tax is to fairly tax a foreign corporation for the privilege of engaging in business in Ohio based on the extent of the corporation's business activity, which takes place in Ohio. Toward that end, Ohio has provided that the tax is going to be on the greater, as Mr. Farron said, of the net worth or the net income, measured by formulas. For the tax year at issue, the net income formula was a four-factor formula, combining property of the corporation, payroll of the corporation, sales of the corporation times two. Under the net income method, it generally apportions income within and without Ohio based on that four-factor formula, unless there's a specific way that that income can be allocated under 5733051. The four-factor formula is underpinned by a concept that an ongoing business property, the employees, and the sales of that business work together in generating income for the company. And those ratios can be roughly equated to the income that's generated within any given state by the corporation. Fundamentally, that concept works well for ongoing business. However, there are circumstances such as those found in this case to which the concept doesn't readily apply. The taxpayer in this case manufactured original equipment parts for the automotive industry. It plied that activity in the United States in two plants, one in Toledo, one in Adrian, Michigan. It's also clear from the record that each plant was operated separately. It had separate books, separate records, separate control. The control was decentralized. It was not centralized. And each of the plants could and did separately account for their own income and loss. During the time of the prior to the sale, they had about 1,000 employees. But during the tax year at issue, they sold all of their manufacturing assets and never again engaged in the manufacturing business. The company went from 1,000 employees to 2 employees. The only thing that it retained was the buildings in which the operations took place, and for a series of a couple of years, rented those buildings to the purchaser. It's this circumstance that renders the usual concept for attributing income activities inapplicable. Given the depreciation applicable to the tangible personal property sold and the adjustment to the price of the inventory for obsolete and slow-moving items, there was a loss on the sale of both the tangible property and the inventory. Where there was a gain on the sale had to do with the goodwill of the organization. In preparing the franchise tax report, the amount of proceeds received for the tangible assets were directly attributable to the physical locations at each plant site, including tangible property and inventory. The amount received for intangibles and goodwill was attributed in and out of Ohio based on a two-factor formula, eliminating the sales factor. The General Assembly has recognized that there are circumstances in which the normal apportionment provisions are not going to apply. That's why it put together 5733.05b2d. And if I may, it says, if the allocation and apportionment provisions of Division B of this section do not fairly represent the extent of a taxpayer's business activity in this state, the taxpayer may request, which request must be in writing and must accompany the report, or the tax commissioner may require, in respect to any or all of a part of the taxpayer's allocated or apportioned base, if reasonable, one of the following: separate accounting, the exclusion of any one or more factors, the inclusion of one or more additional factors which will fairly represent the taxpayer's allocated or apportioned base in the state. In the case of the use of an alternative formula deviating from the normal formula was clear on the face of this report. If you take a look in the record and you take a look at the tax report, the sales factor is blank. The commissioner argues that he's not at liberty to consider the alternative formula since the taxpayer didn't request in writing at the time the report was filed to use an alternate method. By the face of the return, they requested an alternate method because there was no sales factor. Furthermore, the provisions are remedial. This particular section with respect to this was changed in 1997 to allow the request to be made subsequent to the filing of the return at three or four different times along the way. The taxpayer submits that it's met its requirement, and it was clear from the written report that the sales factor wasn't used, therefore there was a deviation. The situation is different from the situation in the Cooper Tire case. In that case, there was a sales factor used. In this case, there was not a sales factor used. It's clear on the face of the report. In the Cooper Tire case, it wasn't until examining what they used to build the property factor and the payroll factor that they differed from the way they were supposed to build it according to statute. Further, the statutory provision in question says if the allocation and apportionment of provisions don't fairly represent the business activity in the state, the commissioner may require, in respect to any or all of the part of the allocated or apportioned base, a different method. It's clear from the record the facts and circumstances of this case show that the standard formulas, which are grounded in a concept of an ongoing, continually operating business, do not fit this case, and therefore the commissioner should require a deviation in order to fit the situation. As I quoted earlier, the goal of the state's franchise tax is to fairly apportion or fairly tax a foreign corporation for its privileges in Ohio based on the extent of the activity in Ohio. A deviation from the norm should be used when the facts and circumstances demonstrate the need, not only if and only if a deviation will yield a tax increase. The commissioner was empowered to do the right thing to have the tax in this instance fairly reflect the real business activity. Also under a review for review and correction under 573311 that was in force at the time with respect to review of his assessments. The statute stated that the commissioner can make such correction to his assessments as he finds proper, and his decision is final, subject to appeal under 571702. So that meant his entire assessment was under review, and upon his own looking at it, if he determined that the deviation was proper, he could have deviated from normal course and used that provision of the statute. The commissioner had the authority and the opportunity to adjust the methodology used in determining how this tax was going to apply to this taxpayer. Moreover, beyond the issue of authority, when we talk about whether this should be allocated or apportioned, merely stating that it doesn't fit with under the allocation provisions of 573305(1) doesn't get to the point. The point is that under these circumstances, where we had two plants operating under the record that it was clear that each of the plants stood on their own, they knew how much of the inventory to allocate to each plant, how much of the sale proceeds from the inventory to allocate to each plant. They had the opportunity to take a look at these two things and to allocate it properly based on its situs, which is exactly what the board did. 573305B2D does not say you can't use it if it doesn't fit the allocation provisions. What it says is if any part of the allocated or apportioned base doesn't fairly fit, then you can use these provisions. And that's exactly what the taxpayer was asking for, and that's exactly what the Board of Tax Appeals did in this situation. It properly cited that which could be cited based on the books and records of the company to more properly reflect the reality of the business situation. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Farron, you've saved 2 minutes of your time.
Mr. Farron, you challenged the application of the two factors and said that they should have used the four. What would be the effect of using the two times sales? How do you use the two times sales when you don't have sales in the ordinary course? You have the bulk of the whole inventory being sold. How does that, doesn't that result in sort of an unfair factor that really is exaggerated?
No, Your Honor, because when you think back, inventory was always held for sale. When it was purchased, it offset a portionable income in the year in which it was purchased. Certainly when it's sold, it shouldn't be treated as allocable income because you're not matching up anything. This is inventory that in the normal course they would have sold. Because they sold substantially all of their assets, they simply sold this inventory, so it's part of their sales. And again, I point out we're talking about a loss here, so actually if they allocated more of the loss to Michigan, Ohio's income would be our franchise tax liability would be higher. But in any event, we're simply talking it's a sale because it's included within the statute, the B2C of section 573305, all receipts from all sales, and it only gives two exceptions. And as I indicated earlier, this doesn't fall within either of those sections.
What about his argument that even though the statute may not specifically cover it, the statute gives the commissioner discretion for unusual situations?
Well, two responses. I believe the statute still has, I believe a request still has to meet the requirement that it must be made in writing and accompany the return. Secondly, the commissioner did not determine on its own that some alternate formula should be used. And certainly there was no specification of error that the commissioner should have used an alternative formula. The whole argument was whether or not the request by the taxpayer for deviation should have been allowed or not under the statutory provision for deviation. I'd also point out that there was no specification of error to this court that even, or to the board, that even addressed the commissioner's determination that he could not consider deviation because the request was not made in writing, or his determination, in fact, that there was no written request. In fact, that I believe is admitted by the parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perrin. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.